Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We would like to welcome everyone to CPFL Energia fourth quarter earnings results. We have with us Mr. Wilson Ferreira Jr., CEO, and other officers of the company. This call is being broadcast simultaneously by the internet on the website www.cpfl.com.br/ir. At that address, you can also find the banner through which the presentation will be available for download. All participants will be in a listen-only mode during the company's presentation. After the presentation, there will be a question and answer session. At that time, further instructions will be given. If any participant needs assistance during this conference, please press star zero for an operator. It is important to mention that this teleconference is being recorded. Before proceeding, let me mention that forward-looking statements that can be made during this conference regarding CPFL Energia management are based on the beliefs and assumptions of the company and information currently available to the company. Forward-looking statements are not guarantees of performance. They involve risks, uncertainties, and assumptions because they relate to further events and therefore depend on circumstances that may or may not occur in the future. Investors should understand that general economic conditions, industry conditions, and other operating factors could also affect the future results of CPFL Energia and cause results that differ materially from those expressed in such forward-looking statements. Now, I would like to ask Mr. Wilson Ferreira Jr. to take the floor. Mr. Ferreira, you may take the floor. Good morning. We have here our presentation of the fourth quarter and the close of 2012. I think that at this presentation it is important to refer, starting on page 3, I feel that before we start the results, give you a quick review of the environment, give you an overview, because I feel that sometimes investors and analysts might have some questions about the last events of the sector. And as we are the largest agent in this sector, I feel that we should clarify some doubts so that we can make more sound projections and provisions and have a better idea of prospects. So we will start by page 3. And in a very transparent way, give you some of the news that somehow or other has been presented regarding this moment in recent events of the sector. Obviously, you know about the drop of the shares, generally speaking, of those companies which were affected by provisionary or temporary measures 679 and companies like ours which were not, but the behavior of the stock market is the same. The circumstances, the context, and less generation after the temporary measure has influenced the drop of the shares of those companies that had already expired concessions, already amortized and depreciated. And like the exchange, sometimes you say, well, there's a floating of the exchange. The spot market also floats, and you have a repercussion. And the state of the reservoirs and the consumption also has its impact. So the values of the spot market, the spot price, affects the investors and the analysts. The rationing risk is something which has come up more recently. The use of thermal plants and the dispatch and the payment of this, the dispatch of energy, and the payment that this dispatch method brings about. So in a very summarized way, I think it's very important to give you an overview of these three issues that are the essence of this. First of all, the renewal of the concessions, the impact on the companies, and our company in particular, and unveiling, let's say, the losses with this temporary provision, the risks of rationing, which sometimes has not been made very clear, and also our doubts regarding liquidity and the distributor's working capital, which certainly, when there are greater dispatches of energy, this has a great impact. And the company has had to take steps and also other associations like Abrati. On page four, we have more specifically, in this case of CPFL, the results of this measure and the rules. On the 24th of January past, we had the application of this temporary measure. You know that 100% of the companies that held transmission concessions for renewal adhered to this. The 11,000 megawatts of the generators of, we had nine companies, 2,000 megawatts a month did not adhere to the proposal of this measure presented by the government. In the specific case of the distributors, no impact on Parcel B, and the simple application of the reduction proposals, including the reduction of generation tariffs of the amount which would be renewed, a drop of about 95 reais to about 32 reais, bringing, and then a change of the tariffs, the adherence of 100% of the transmission system. That is to say, from that, a reduction of transmission costs of all the Brazilian companies of about 60%, and in the specific case of the distributors, also the important reduction of charges, which were shared here throughout the consumption chain of industrial residential segments. So depending on the average tariff, these reductions, which are shown here on this first chart, 18% for Paulista, 18.4% Piratininga, and 22% RGE, 19.7% for Santa Cruz, 23% for SE Paulista, 18% for Sul Paulista Jaguari, and approximately 21% for Mococa. So with this, the temporary measure eliminated and, well, that was transferred all the effects to the consumer. And so what impacts do we have now for the sector and the country? Here we have an impact down below, or a view of what the prospects of this reduction will have permanently in real terms for the future. According to the consultancy firm that render services to us, we can see very clearly that there is a real prospect of increase of competitiveness. I will go into this further later for the industry, and this has a positive repercussion regarding the competitiveness and also for the export agenda. So because of the tariff reduction, companies in Brazil will become more competitive, and not only because of this measure, but others that I will talk about later, will be more competitive in the international market in increasing exports. At the same time, as the imports, for the same reason, will be reduced. So there will be less need for imports. And we can also see in the 0.2.1, for example, in 2013, an increase of the industrial activity. So there will be an impact on industrial production and also the income of Brazilians, since all Brazilians now will have a less expense with energy. Bottom line, tariff reduction for all consumers, an average of 20%, no impact on distribution companies or Parcel B of distribution companies, a reduction, of course, of expenses with generation and transmission, and greater competitiveness of the Brazilian industry. Right, so this temporary measure, going now onto page five, brings also, because of those who've adhered and not adhered, some opportunities. The main one, more than 2,000 megawatts, did not adhere to this proposal or this price presented. So these concessions, obviously, will be put out to tender at the end of this period, which is 2015. So there will be opportunities for operators such as ourselves, who are very efficient in our operations, to be able to seek the opportunity of rendering O and M for these concessions, reminding you that we are a very large operator of hydroelectric plants. We are also in those plants where we have a share in the control, or we are operator of these plants, and in all cases where we render these services at lower values than those that were presented as a proposal to the current concession holders, some that accepted and part of those who did not accept. I think that this then is a very important point. There was not, and was not up to then, opportunities for O and M of plants whose concession will expire in 2 years' time. On the other hand, it is also important to say that all these measures have brought about, especially regarding prospects of the term of contracts of purchase and sale of electric power, and this already happened with the large consumers of the Group A. They were already not allowed to come to have a concession in terms less than 5 years. This did not happen with the special concessioners, which those in the last few years, especially the last 2 years, had a migration to the free market, although at that time with the freedom of the once again having a concession in 6 months. These consumers, who are the future of the free market, now will have rules which are similar to what's called the A4, or special consumers. They will be under rules similar to the A4. They will also have to have long-term contracts, and they will not, at the time of making their decision of going to the free market, they will not be able to go back in less than 5 years. This obviously will bring to the commercialization companies the challenge of a more technical sale of the supply of a long-term energy and more competitive conditions. Quite certainly this will bring an advantage for the commercialization of companies of our group. First of all, because we are large, CPFL Commercialization Brazil is the largest operator of this industry at the moment, and it has, as you well know, long-term position, and we were a supplier of some PPAs. And we also know that small commercialization operations will be consolidated. There was a boom in the last few years, a significant growth of the number of commercialization operations, and we think that with these steps, this market has become more professional, and this market demands operators with credibility, with financial capacity and technical capacity to format service options and consumer service in much more sophisticated conditions than hereto, and will bring advantages for the large companies and companies like CPFL Brazil. So I would like to conclude the first remarks about the 579 and my remarks about the CPFL regarding the adherence to 2P spot market offers, or the exclusion of 2,000 megawatts, which is very little. There is no other impact regarding this reduction of Parcel B or the revenue of our generators and commercialization companies. On page 6, we now have the second issue, which is certainly a reason for concern of the market, which has to do exactly with the energy conditions. We have tried to put here in these three charts perhaps the most important charts for the clarification of the energy conditions of the system at the moment. So on the upper left-hand corner, we have the reservoir levels of the national grid, the SIN. This is the equivalent reservoir, or reservoir equivalent to the north, northeast, south, southeast, and center-west. And as we may see, we in fact finished the year with about 30 reservoirs full, well, just about 30%. At that time, showing a delay of the rains, and at that time there was this worry that we would find ourselves in different circumstances or more dangerous circumstances regarding supply. I said to the press at that time that in fact the rainy season, the main rainy season, especially in the northeast, southwest, and midwest, the rains were delayed, but as always, January, February, and March is always the rainy season. There was a real prospect that these reservoirs would fill up. For all our information of our own reservoirs and the weather. Conditions. And down below we have the curve, the rationing curve. In 2001 we had a very atypical year at that time, and the curve profile is practically flat, whilst we have some other curves above showing that in this period of January, February, March we always have a positive inclination regarding the reservoirs. They do fill up. And the same curve inclination that we have been seeing since December. We completed January with more than 7%, 37.8%, therefore February 46%, already crossing the atypical line of the year 2001, and our expectation, here we are now, 12th of March, yesterday, almost 48% of the reservoirs, 48% full. And we will close March at about 52-53%, according to our expectations. And we are now 48% in 2 weeks. And on the right-hand side, we have a consultant to help us here, the PSR, and in January, due to that situation, they have an index of rationing, and that time was very 49%, is very high. In February it dropped, and in March, at the beginning of March, it was already zero rationing risk, 0%. So why do things happen like this? So the answer is down below. In 2001, to face up to that curve, which was practically flat, we had a thermoelectric plant about 3,600 megawatts at that time. We had the Brazilian system, almost 90 megawatts of load, 4% of the power supply in thermoelectric plants. And at that time, the thermoelectric plants were very old and not very efficient. This situation has changed significantly. We have increased fourfold that capacity, and we now have, last year, we practically have more than 13,000 megawatts. This year alone, we will put in about 3,000 megawatts. We will close the year with approximately 15,700 megawatts of thermoelectric plants, all of them with much newer equipment and better equipment, gas and fuel, better fuel oil, and all of this obviously will give us much greater security. And besides us having a problem of storage of reservoirs of water, as you can see, well, the upper chart which shows us that this is not the case, we have a much greater thermoelectric capacity now, which allows us in a hydrothermal system to dispatch the energy so we can have the greatest safety possible. So the decision regarding dispatch in under the conditions that this was made are totally rational, correct, as we see it, and will give us the most safe energy sector, which is the objective of all our plans. So it was very important to make this disclaimer vis-a-vis these energy conditions. And besides that, we still have, and I'm now on page 7, some steps which have been taken now. The first has been discussed, auction A minus zero, to bring part of the supply that did not adhere to the concession renewal, the option of a contract of 2 years for 2,000 megawatts. Besides that, the adoption and experimental method of the so-called tariff flags. This will allow us to have a greater number of consumers, especially the low-voltage consumers, to be able to determine their consumption time at times where the tariffs will be lower, and they will be able to consume energy where the system has more expensive tariff price, but we will have therefore the so-called tariff flags, which will be applied as from 2014. But in 2013, we will already have this in most of the companies. This will already be on the light bills, and we'll use the most real generation cost as we can and applying this to the consumers. And besides that, the discussions going on about the regional energy auctions, all this to maximize the production capacity and rationalize the transmission costs in such a way that we can have sources which are closest to the load, minimizing the cost of transmission lines. Therefore, regional auctions are important. And finally, in fact, we have held discussions, I think, which are very important regarding the thermal plants and the hydroelectrics with plants also without reservoirs, which will allow us to have thermal contracts according to the criteria not only of availability but also of quantity, so that we may have thermoelectric plants at the base of the system working throughout the year in a different way from the thermoelectric plants which we have, which are availability plants, which are triggered off only when we have conditions that are less favorable. Now, on page 8, we consequently, I think it's important to mention how this dispatch occurs and how it burdens the concessionaires. So here we have the so-called CCEARs by availability. So it is the energy purchase contract by availability. How does this occur? In fact, the ANIL at the annual anniversary of each company increases the tariff, the fixed cost of each of these plants, and it also establishes the expectation of what the price of settlement of the difference is, or the spot price, which should occur during the year based on its forecasts or the systems which it has available in its system at that particular moment. So then, how does this dispatch work?
Well, thinking about the spot price, theoretically, if over the year we have a spot price established by a ANIL, two things may happen. The spot price may be lower, and this can be seen here. And when it is lower, since we are charging consumers a lower spot price, that volume, which was not dispatched, starts building up a liability of the distributor towards consumers. That is, in the tariff offers or has resources that were taken from the consumer, but not all the energy was dispatched because the spot price is lower. So in this case, in the CVA, in the checking account, we reduce what consumers have paid in excess. On the other hand, what may happen, and it happened in second half 2012, the spot price may be higher than what was established by the regulator from most of the distributor companies. Obviously, showing the erratic rain patterns of last year. So what happens is just like the exchange rate that fluctuates so much. When you have less rain, the spot price tends to go up. And in this case, we will have to dispatch more thermal energy. These thermal plants are dispatched by the generation cost, at the generation cost, and probably they will be dispatched by order of merit at a higher price that had been established by ENEL. In this case, this excess value that was paid by the utility becomes an asset, so that in the next tariff review, this is charged from consumers. In this case, utilities anticipated this amount on behalf of consumers, and at the tariff review, it will be paid with these funds. It's important to understand this because there are a number of availability agreements, as I said. Those 13,700 follow this pattern. But beyond that, and here we're talking about the second chart here, which are the service, system service charges. So beyond the dispatch according to the order of merit, if the spot price is the reference for order of merit dispatch by that threshold, that the CNP, the National Council for Energy Policies, can order dispatches regardless of the order of merit, but with a view to preventive dispatches. So, for instance, the spot price last week was around 370 reals, so we should have dispatched by order of merit all thermal plants up to this limit of 370 reals. However, our dispatch is higher for power plants that have a generation cost beyond 370. So this dispatch is simply preventive dispatch, but it creates additional cost. Very well. Underneath, we can see what all of this meant in general in the case of the utilities under CPFL Energia. 164 million was exactly the cost of the distributor companies regarding the regulated market contracts by availability. The 38 million that you can see here in green refers to anything that exceeded the order of merit. So it was beyond the spot price. And the only argument here is the preventive dispatch or safety of the system. And then in January, we had two other items which were not part of the distribution company's list. This one in yellow and in red. Yellow, do you remember what I said, that 2,000 megawatts on average did not embrace the proposal for renewal of concessions, and this volume was designed as quota for the distributors. Since the companies did not accept that, distributors were undercontracted. So there was this exposure, involuntary exposure to the spot price, and naturally This is involuntary exposure because the utility would have contracted 100% of quotas if generators had offered 100% of quotas. Since a few did not get in, the quota volume fell short of the estimate. So this is why we have this 37 million cost, that is the under-contracted volume below utility sales referred or equivalent to the spot price amounted to 27 million. So you know that beyond quotas, and this is important, the offer made to generators eliminated completely the hydrological risk. So if the plant failed to generate what it had to, what was estimated, this risk is passed on to consumers. This is the hydrological risk, the so-called hydrological risk. So they expected 100 units of power and only 97 units of power produced. So this too is the hydrology risk, and those generators who decided to run their plants at 32 reals, they do not have the risk anymore. So this risk is passed on to consumers. Now, see that this is this 36 million, and it's important to point out of these four items mentioned here, is exactly the result of the interactions among the groups and the government and we ourselves and the association. It's important to say at the moment that, well, we have this involuntary exposure that has happened for the first time, but it will occur again for sure. Or either the hydrology risk, which was not a breakdown item but has started to be as we converted that power volume into quotas, or the dispatch of thermal plants out of merit. So these three items, which are a result of Decree 7945, and if we didn't have a decree, this would have been passed on to utilities. This will be totally absorbed by CDE. So around 100 million of this volume of the 260 will be shouldered by CDE. However, on the other side, we have the regulated market contract. It's estimated that part of these contracts will be shouldered by CD in the annual realignment so as to have a reduction in the amount to be passed on to consumers. And this will be at utility criteria because this exposure is not even. A few are more exposed, others are less exposed, so a meal when the time comes for the price realignment will consider that and may inject part of the funds straight into the companies to mitigate this transfer to consumers. And here on the right-hand side, let's see this. Well, the structural change. There was a change in the threshold of over-contracting. We had 3% and now we'll have 5%. And this will induce overcapacity for the industry and will make power conditions in Brazil even more robust. And this is an important achievement. And by the other hand, the topic of the pricing of regulated market contracts, if there was any kind of any random pricing, this new stock pricing method will be made more robust. There's the transition criteria, but the spot price that will be incorporated by each utility will be as close to reality as possible. So this more sophisticated methodology in the spot price method will be incorporated so that this amount will also fall over time. So I'm now on page 18. And as a result, I'd like to show you in two pages here the our positive outlook regarding the assets that we operate in and their performance. So I will start here with distribution. This is our main business segment. Power volumes have been growing over the past 5 years at nearly 4% a year. But the results of our operating profit, EBITDA, are growing at 8.8%. And this also shows that our operations are more efficient. And we have shared this with the market for some time. We closed 2012 with a recurring EBITDA in IFRS of 2,678,000. Now we can see that our generation strategy is becoming sharper. We're growing more quickly. We have CAGR for EBITDA of 27.7% a year. We closed 2012 with 1,671,000 in EBITDA, and here with an important participation of the recent strategy adopted by the company, investing in renewable energy, which already accounts for one-third of the generation total, or 50% in our generation as a result of investing in renewable sources. Installed capacity has been growing steadily, as we can see, at 15% a year. Very well, on page 19 we have the same breakdown for commercialization and services. As I told you in the beginning, commercialization of the CPFL has come to a standard, and we are now the greatest operation of the industry. And EBITDA has been growing 250 to 180 million reals a year. But the newest thing is the focus adopted by CPFL Brazil and CPFL Services with the segregation of the management. We did this last year, bearing in mind a better focus on commercialization and on services. We have a number of activities here. And this has led to maintenance of results around 300 million, but it's important that we're investing in commercialization. You see the number of consumers has grown, and this already reflects the strategy of regional offices in the northeast and the south, two operations in the southeast. So we've been growing our platform, and we understand that either owing to what we invest in terms of the customer base or either by the consolidation that may happen in the industry and the need for special energy, we will be much better off. As a result, the bottom chart summarizes the company growth. So we have seen EBITDA, consolidated EBITDA, growing at 7.5% a year, and we closed the year as the largest distribution company, market share of 13%, and now we are the commercialization leader, 10%, and we closed the year as the second biggest private generator with 2.3% of market share. Very well, now I go on to page 20. Very briefly, let's talk about the fourth quarter highlights. It's important to say that sales grew in the concession area. The start-up of two plants, a solar plant and another small hydro plant, investments over 500 million reals in the fourth quarter, 2.5% in 2012. Dividend payments close to 1,100,000, and acquisition along with Equatorial of Group Redis assets, and now they are under a lawsuit that we expect to conclude by the end of the first half year. Extraordinary tariff review with no impact on the remuneration of distributors companies, increase in shares liquidity of 30% last year, and a few awards, particularly as regards sustainability, innovation, and in particular, the company remained at, within the ISE and for the first time joined Dow Jones Sustainability Index Emerging Markets. Very well, let's move on to 21 and 22, talking about energy sales. So in the fourth quarter of 2012, sales showed or gave us an idea of what 2013 will be. Very vibrant sales in the captive market, slightly above 3%. I call your attention to the TUSD because this refers to large clients, 12.12%, and in concessions we grew 5.6%. This can be seen in the right-hand corner graph. We also grew a lot in the southeast, double what the region grew, and a little less in the south, but here we see the impact of southern power plants and issues connected to Argentina, but we believe we'll see an improvement in that. But we've posted a growth much higher than Brazil's, particularly owing to our presence in the southeast. Total sales grown at 12.1%. We've talked about distributor companies, 30% of commercialization, conventional sales, and 117% in the operations of CPFL y Renovado. Now, underneath, here we have 10%. I've been in this industry a very long time, and a few times did I see this kind of growth in household segment and the recovery of the industry of 1.6%. On page 22, we have exactly the same approach here for 2012. So total sales grew by 3.8%. TUSD, the tariff for use of system of the distribution system, is here, 8.1%, 14% on top, or an extra 14% for commercialization and services in renewable energy. And here what happens in the year, 7%, and the industry recovered in the third quarter. It grew 7.7%, and we continued showing growth higher than Brazil's. Now, let me show you these three charts on page 23, talking about households. Here, the most important thing is the migration in São Paulo State. So you see that people are moving away from the metropolitan region where we had very little growth, 98.98. And where are people going to? They're going to the hinterlands of São Paulo State. Here we're talking about two regions, the lowlands of Santos and the Campinas region. We can see the population is growing double the rate of the metropolitan region, and migration is 3% in the Santos region, and this will now grow with the pre-salt issue in the metropolitan region of Campinas. Campinas is the second largest city in São Paulo State, grown at 9%. And on the right side, we see that this has a perfect alignment. We see real income growing, and residential consumption is practically even. And here we talk about housing credit, and perhaps this is a challenge in Brazil of providing housing to the population. Credit is big, but you see as a proportion of GDP, it's 4.8%. Countries such as China have 15%, the European Union and the U.S., around 15-70%, so we have a lot to grow. Now, on page 24, we have retail sales. So we see from 2007, we see that we've grown 60% over this period, more than 10%, and indicators of retail activity grew 75%. It's in excess of 15% a year. So you see underneath, opening of shopping malls, practically 16% of Brazilian shopping malls are located in the CPFL concession areas in São Paulo, Rio Grande do Sul, and again a perfect alignment between retail sales and commercial consumption. Finally, let's move on to page 25, where we have industrial production. Well, last year we can see here in the top chart a loss of competitiveness. Lower competitiveness is the name of the disease that plagued us. Rising costs, problems with infrastructure, overvalued exchange rate. I'm not going to dwell on this. We've talked about it lately. But we have a number of stimulus proposals that the government came up with, the exchange rate, the reduction of the burden for companies, but two important things. Monthly consultations and disbursements at BNDES grew by 50% from the second to the third quarter and from the third to the fourth with corresponding disbursements. And on the right-hand side, we see what I told you in the beginning. Why do we believe that the industry will gain competitiveness? So comparing 2012 and the forecast for 2013, for a number of elements that will be determinant, the index for total cost in the industry. So you see a drop in the unit labor cost. We see here electricity costs, a nearly 20% drop, and this reflects what happened in January, stability in domestic inputs, a small growth in non-tradable domestic inputs, imported inputs had some growth, but you see that the total cost index was practically level, and the index for nominal exchange rates dropped by 18%, the index for total cost, and this is why we believe that the industry will be more competitive on foreign markets and exports.
Now let's go on to page 26 to fourth quarter results. Here we have also the reported amount above in IFRS, and IFRS particularly for this greater dispatch which we had in the last quarter. Obviously, this builds in the expenses and does not recognize assets of regulatory basis because of the decree. These will be reduced, the assets and liabilities, but for the time being, this is what we have. We have increased our revenue. This reflects the start-up of operations, tariff adjustments. We grew 27% in revenue. We dropped 16% EBITDA and 42% in net income. This is IFRS. When we build in the vision of regulatory assets and liabilities and a group of non-recurrents, particularly the private pension fund, the result, which would be managerial and recurrent of the company, there is a growth of 35% of the EBITDA and 15% of net income. What are the things which affected negatively the company in this last quarter? Well, the main, most important, we are talking here, are 310 million, which can be seen here in the EBITDA of the fourth quarter this year. It was 30 last year. It's 310 this year. This leads us to the bottom line, more than 300 million reais, or less 300 million reais, in fact, which refer to these regulatory assets and liabilities, which we will see in the next, we will see the effects in the next 12 months. And then we have regulatory assets and liabilities, and also the financial income of the distributors. This is exactly the new application and the positive results for the concessionaire, although in accounting there is no generation of cash. And here I would like to mention that as this is not an economic result, financial result, I mean, I also think that for a more prudent procedure, we have not paid out this in dividends. We have a reserve. But some analysts have reported in their results that this is a reduction of payout. that we have maintained the same payout of 95% of the distributable result and not the accounting result. So this report is important. And now we have here, and also because of the company being more conservative, these are the amount of law, legal and judicial expenses. We have reinforced our legal and judicial expenses reserve. So our LPP has been strengthened. At the end of last year, we had a greater delinquency, particularly a question of the end of the mayor's mandate and administration. So we reinforced our LPP provisions, and we increased also our efficiency and we have removed here the costs regarding dismissal of people from our concessionaires. And you may see that from the point of view of EBITDA, this group of items, regulatory assets and liabilities and non-recurrent items, have impacted the result of the EBITDA in about 403 million reals and net income 232 in this quarter. The notes explanations here on the page 27 of these results of the fourth quarter. Summarized, you can see the two performances, the managerial, recurring managerial, and the reported IFRS. Here I'll talk about the reported IFRS, a drop of 16%. We have had 27% increase of income, of revenue, a growth of sales, a growth of average tariff because of adjustments, 6% TUSD increase, and the shares because of the growth of renewable CPFL services and generation. This has given an increase of 27%. And then we have a very much greater growth percentage-wise of the energy cost. And here we have not only the cost of bought energy for resale, but especially what we were talking about in the beginning, the dispatch of thermal. Of 470,000,250 are with the dispatch with the thermal, the so-called CCRER. And also, only the cost with the CAGR of the system of 222 million. So more than half of our increase in the cost of energy refers exclusively to the dispatch of thermal electric energy, CCER. And on the other hand, the increase of expenses of O&E. And here we have several things, and I will show you that the recurring expenses are good. But at this moment, we also have the thermoelectric, and just in fuel oil, more than 100 million reais. And the renewable, CPF renewable, we started this operation in the second half of the year, and we have had also, with the coming into operation of other assets, an increase of personnel costs, the collective bargaining procedure dismissal, which is negative, legal and judicial expenses, and others that I referred to before, 142 million, the write-off of DISCO's assets, 28 million, and adjustments in bad debts, 22 million, and exchange differences as well. PLD from 42 to 306. And now page 28, a drop of net income. And here, obviously, what determines this negative variation was the EBITDA drop, which was affected by the IFRS criteria. So EBITDA dropped 16% or 160 million. There was a reduction of the restatement of net income of 27%. And here, a non-recurring effect, which is exactly the updating, financial update of the assets of the distributors of 96 million, but here a reduction of the debt charge because of a better macroeconomic scenario. A decrease of income from financial investments, 77 million, remunerating less. And then the consolidation of CPF in Nevada, 57 million. These are the most important items of this point. And then depreciation and amortization, obviously, because we're coming into operation of assets in the renewables and in the geography of the balance and the piece of things tax, and also a credit of income tax because of the difference of in results. On page 29, I will be brief, just to show you the results of 2012, and also much more so the analysts and investors can see the recurring base of the company in IFRS, a slight growth of 1.2 of the EBITDA, a drop of net income 22%, and the recurring results net of regulatory assets and liabilities, the credits which we have for next year, for 2013, I mean, because it's a palista. Most of the regulatory assets made up are the Compagnia Paulista di Sforzi-Luce, a distributor, the largest distributor of the group, which has a tariff adjustment now on April 8th, in a month's time, less than a month. Much of this account of regulatory assets, much of this dispatch of thermals, will be incorporated, built in here to our tariff. But it's important to highlight here a growth, an important growth of EBITDA of 22.7% on the annual base, totaling 4,625,000,000. And the same thing would have happened with the net income going to 1,676,000,000. The details are similar to the ones that I have just given you, highlighting just here the regulatory assets and liabilities, 670 million reals, which would impact the net income, 439, and then with the discounts of the that we made on the balance sheet, we still have here a remaining value of 700 million reals. And as I had said, and I think it is important to talk about these details, we have several things going on, but the commitment that we have with the analysts and investors particularly, and is to be very stringent with costs and very efficient in our operations. So here we just have a reconciliation of the results, and the result would be of personnel, material, third-party service and others, we have a nominal drop of 1.9% or a real drop of 7.2% when we include the inflation rates for personnel, material, etc. Here under personnel, we just have some reconciliations to because of the dismissals that we made the year before last and the growth of CPFL Renovables and CPFL Servicios. And with this conciliation, we have a growth of our personnel expense of 2.9 in nominal terms or a drop of 2.7 in real terms and on the left-hand chart. And regarding material third services and others, we do the same. We make the same consideration, the reported MSO and the adjusted nominal, which drops 5.4, and the adjusted real, which drops 10.6. So this is included in the recurrent base of the company, indexed to IGPM for 108 million reals. We talked about 100 million reals, and largely we have this because of the MSO. This is the best match for the company, and also because of the implementation of the zero-based budget. On page 31, I'm talking about the debt of the company, payout of 406 million reals in dividends, and this has to do with a payout of 95% of the distributable result. The company then, with this disbursement, has more than 10 billion in dividends distributed since the IPO. On page 32, the prospect of future costs, we are planning investments of 8.7 billion reals throughout the next 5 years, and we invested more than 2.5 million last year and 2.3 billion this year just in distribution. Completion of the third cycle and the maintenance regarding generation and particularly renewable generation. On page 33, we have leverage. The company with a net debt of 12.6 billion, a covenant rate which they were all adjusted at the beginning of the second half of last year, so there are no frights here, considering the so-called regulatory balance for regulatory assets receivables, in a reported value by IFRS 3.6, but in the amount used for the covenants 2.89. What is important here regarding this breakdown, 60% of the company's debt in CDI, I think it's important to highlight the importance of the financing for BMDS, almost 30%, 8% in the prefixed. These are the PSIs, always below the inflation. This obviously brings about a reduction of the nominal cost and the real cost of the debt. We are at the lowest levels ever since we started measuring, 9% of nominal cost, 3% of real cost. And so this gives us, with the amount of cash that the company closed the year, around 2.5 billion. You may see this on page 34. The coverage, cash coverage of the short term debt, and 1.3 times we our average term is 4.5 years, and we have this on a very balanced profile, about 2.5 billion reals a year, short term 12.8%. And I highlight here this financial conservative attitude. At the beginning of January, we approved the issuance of a debenture for Pidokin Ingazur to give us greater flexibility and also to face up to other commitments regarding the oil dispatch. So, a very good issue, coordinated by the Banco do Brasil for working capital, CDI plus 0.83%, and maturity 8 years. This is the first issue that we in the group have with this term. Maintaining our ratings by Standard & Poor's or Fitch of a AA+, because of the company's flexibility and diversification and generation, distribution efficiency, and this reflects the good fundamentals of the company. So with this cash now coming in February, we have a cash position of 3.4 billion at the end of February, which is almost twice the short-term amortization. Average term goes up to 4.6 years, and short-term we have 12% of our debt. So let's close here on page 37. Just a report of the assets and the being built of the Renovares for the first four, which will start operations at the end of this year or the second semester, 582 megawatts in the first half of the year, or the third quarter. We will include another 330 megawatts. All of them contracted, and we will conclude this work with the CPFL Renovables by the end of the year, 1,500 megawatts of assets under operation and contracted. Page 38, a bit sad, the performance of the shares, as we had said, a drop. We dropped together with the electric power rate in the fourth quarter and the year. This does not reflect the good fundamentals of the company, and also the question of exchange, we dropped 20%. And here the good news is the increase of the average volume of trading. And on page 39, the maintenance of CPFL on the NYSE. It is one of the two companies that has remained of the ISE since December of 2005. And we are delighted to enter the portfolio of the Dow Jones Sustainability Index Emerging Markets. So this is what I have to say. I'm sorry we have gone over our time a little bit, but I am at your disposal. And I would also like to say that we have been appointed, or Gustavo Strela has been appointed to be the CFO of the company, taking Lorival Luz's place. He is now leaving the company to go on to new challenges. It is great to be able to use a succession plan. This is a very important practice of our group, and we have been working for more than 5 years with an international consultant. Gustavo comes from in-house. He has been with the CPFL Energia for more than 12 years, always in the financial area. He is well known to some of you, and in IR, and the last 2 years, he received the challenge of coming back to planning and controlling and to implement the zero-based budget. And the improvements reflect all his activity and his efforts. So it is great to be able to share this with the market, the appointment of Gustavo Strela to be CFO. So now I am at your disposal for questions. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now start our question and answer session. So for a question, please press star 1. To remove your question from the queue, press star 2. Our first question comes from Mr. Michael Caivo from Santander. Good afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Ferreira, for your call. It's very detailed about the sector. And congratulations, Gustavo, for your appointment. I have two questions. One about the industry and the other about CPFL. About the sector, you said, Wilson, about commercialization, the expectation of the consolidation of the sector. As we see it in a decree published last week, we understand that the commercialization companies will have to pay part of the ISS and that the energy security and our account, where they will earn R$4 per megawatt hour traded. When we look at CPFL Brazil, we see that even one of the largest of the sector, the margins are low. The net margin is about 5%. So certainly, not only this would corroborate with the idea of a consolidation, but it generates concern about the sustainability of the commercialization companies if they have to pay per volume transactions. So I'd like to understand if you see it this way, and do you see this with concern, just the side of the commercialization, this and the effect of the last week's decree, and then this non-recurring item regarding legal expenses of 150 million reals. Can you give us more details regarding the subsidiary and what issue it was?
Thank you very much for the question, Marcio. Well, just as you said, we see the same way the problem of...
Primeiro, comercializadora é de fato...
Well, commercialization has in fact low margins. This is the future of the business, and ours boasts the highest margin, perhaps owned a number of attributes of different competencies that are perceived by the market, and it also stands concern among us the payment of this charge by distributors. And I have no doubt, and this is public, so both the Association of Commercialization Companies and Generators have challenged this transition process. They have required meetings with the government, with ministers, with the NEO. I wouldn't say this topic is totally behind us. And here we can see two things happen. Either they will recognize that payment of this charge doesn't make any sense at all, either to generators or distributors, or in the case of distributors, it will end up in being built into the consumer price because the margin is so small and we wouldn't be able to deal with this extra payment. But obviously, and all of that, sales commercialization operations, as we've been talking about distribution, they tend to incorporate the topic of scale. I mean, they tend to build scale to be competitive. I have no doubt that the free market, this not in Brazil, but in the world, this free market will grow and the potential of migration of A4 consumers is significant and they may virtually double the free market over the coming years, but they must have more efficient agents. We understand we are one of these agents, not because we're one of the largest, but owing to the distinctive competences that we have. If the system of price and market forecast and governance practices regarding risk and quality operations regarding credit, so there's a vast array of differentiators that will strengthen the commercialization operation. And being very honest, I believe that this debate about the charge, well, CPFL will join in and to challenge this charge. Now, as regards the provisions that we've done, the legal provisions, we have detected, well, there are two things. First of all, the provisions, LOP provisions, we recognize credits that were a result of incorporating new billing systems, and we believed we had to reinforce these provisions based on numbers from the second half year. So we included 75 million in provisions and one third of that in the last half year. And we believe that this is absolutely enough to face up to what we have to pay. So we've included a provision criteria that is more restrictive than we had in the past. And the other half, 75 refers to LLP. And 55 refers to, here, yes, a legal treatment. 50 million reals is a reinforcement to our provisions. We also made a comparison with similar companies and we detected that our success rate, which is 75% of our operations, that it would be reasonable to do this, to enforce the provision, and we did that with the auditing department. So we believe that this was an important initiative to strengthen our legal management ability. And obviously, we will profit from the knowledge of the new vice president, Ricardo Girolami, who had an experience in this area. And as a result of our assessments and studies, we believe this would be important. We continue being the company with the lowest provision by consumer index in the entire industry, and it shows how efficient the company is, but we believed we could improve this efficiency. So this is basically what it is. Our next question, Maria Fernanda Lorenzi from JP Morgan. Maria Fernanda, you can speak now.
Com licença, lembrando que para fazer perguntas, por favor, digitem a...
So, to ask a question, please press star 1.
Com licença, nossa próxima pergunta...
Our next question is from Sergio Muda, Una Capital. Good morning, Wilson. Thank you very much for the information. Now, a quick question about the CDE. Do you already know how this will be accounted for as debt or income? Sergio, thank you for the question. This has not been regulated yet. The CDE is the Energy Development Account, and we've been at the agency dealing with this topic, and we are working so that this is posted as income rather than debt, and this somehow will determine that the IFRS accounting will be preserved, so merely as an asset. So the trend is not for it to be seen as a loan, but as revenue for the company. So that will have a positive impact under the IFRS. So we need this recommendation, but discussions are moving in this direction for us to reinforce the balance sheet of the company. And obviously, you know that the IFRS in failing to recognize regulatory assets for market purposes, it shows, since you have to post expenses when they occur under the catch regime, you end up having a false impression of indebtedness. So it was trend when we did this study, we were not to have a very strong focus on cost coverage, but also, and this has been a constant effort here, for it to be recognized under the IFRS as revenue rather than debt. Our next question comes from Maria Fernanda Lourdes, JP Morgan. Thank you very much. We're having some problem. We have two questions about the assets that are falling due. Which ones are preferred to be taken up for an auction? And I'd like to know whether you have an estimate of EBITDA to run this asset. And I'd also like to know about the recurring assets. Will you keep certain assets? What will happen with the holding company? Very well. As regards assets, obviously, we have put together a group in the company to look into each of these assets that should go to the tender. Obviously, owing to our modus operandi, with our assets, with the higher automation, we do not have any regional preference for assets. Any hydro generation asset can be operated by CPFLs, but obviously we prefer larger assets similar to the ones we have, also because our cost reference is already established for this kind of asset. I'd say that if we have to look at the estimated or implicit cost of OEM that was built into the generation rates at the moment, and depending on the size of the plant, is between 10 and 15 reals per megawatt hour. The PSL's operations, maintenance operations, always have lower amounts, between 20 and 30% lower. So obviously we are an operator that can add value to any operation. Now, as regards the Rodi Group, the final operating structure has not been established yet. But two things. First of all, I'd say that we're less than a week from the legal recovery suit, and we have an operation that gathers or has the best of two groups as regards regional operations. And the experience of Equatorial is proven in assets in the north of Brazil, and the advantage that the PSL has in operating assets in the southeast, particularly in São Paulo, is also recognized. No decision has been made as to what will be done after the conclusion of the process, but we will try to incorporate synergies into the northern assets through Equatorial and in the southeast through CPFL. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1.
Our next question comes from Mr. Marcelo Fá from Brasil Rural. Good afternoon. Could you talk a little bit about the settlement of energy contracts in January, which ANEEL did? And what do you think should occur at the end of this engine? And what about the strategy of CPFL for this year? Did you place more energy the first month and less during the re-seasonality? Well, there's not much to say about the suspension. I think the suspension has a motive, which Eletrobras companies, that regardless of any value judgments, there was the permission for an atypical re-seasonality, a posteriori, in other words, in a retroactive way, when the price was already known. So what does this mean? Just to justify the request made by Eletrobras. There are companies such as ours, and thus I answer your second question, that are sold. There are generation companies which are sold so to meet the needs of a certain amount of energy throughout the year. How is this seasonality done? It's flat, except for some very specific characteristics of regional capacity. We work, if it is about, let's say, a PU of 100, we work with variations not above 5%, above or below, when we do this re-seasonalization. This is a practice based on the operational capacity of these assets. So theoretically, we are not one of the companies that have done atypical seasonalization. We did a typical one, because should there be an opportunity, quote-unquote, of atypical seasonalization to benefit from a higher price, a spot price in the month of January, we also think that this atypical exposure and placing the company in a long position in January, you obviously would put the same company, the same asset in a short position throughout the year, where there would be a very clear prospect of higher prices, stock prices, there will still be higher still when we have this methodology applied throughout the year. So we did not operate the groups generation assets in a speculative way. We do this seasonalization in a very technical way to meet the needs of the load that we are contracted for. With no kind of arbitration of prices, we are quite satisfied with the PPAs that we have. But it's important to know that there are generation assets that don't even do that. They are obliged to do a flat seasonalization. And in this case, when we have an atypical seasonalization calling for significant variance, there is no prospect that this aspect can be reimbursed. It was only atypical because it could be done retroactively with a known spot price. And who benefited from this? The generators who did not have, differently from us, contracts to be honored throughout the year. This seasonalization then could have been determined with a greater gain without the risk of the short exposure during the year. This is a peculiarity of theirs. This might have been seen by the regulator, and since it does have impacts, a re-seasonalization may include some problems for operations already carried out. I think that they will hear all the parties so as to define which the best alternative is vis-a-vis this procedure of January. We did not do this atypical seasonalization, therefore we are neutral regarding this event. Next question, Mr. Enrique Barraje from UBS. Good afternoon. A question about CAPEX. You have a CAPEX of $1 billion for 2013, $1.082 billion for CPL Renovables, and for the non-renovables, $1.006 billion. Why the difference? And an increase of 480 million for distributors. What is the motive? Why a greater CAPEX for distribution? Regarding the 2013, this amount regarding generation, 1,072,000, is 63% of the share of CPF fell in CPF Renovavo for 100% stake, and 1,072,000 is a pro rata of our stake. And you asked a second question regarding the commercialization. I couldn't hear you very well. Regarding 2016, the sound was bad. Your guidance has increased 460 million. And another figure for 2016, why the difference? So you have a higher CAPEX. It's very difficult to hear, I'm sorry. Mr. Fahoura can't hear either. Oh, okay. So what I have understood is that you were asking me why in 2015 and 16 we were going to have an increase of CAPEX of the distributors. Right. Well, the main explanation here is because of the inclusion of the systems of electronic measurement, tele measurement, the smart grid system. And we imagine that the discussion that is being carried out, or will be carried out now in 2013 with ANEEL and the setting of standards, etc., might have a greater impact on the company as from 2015 and 16 because of the closing of the revision cycles in the Paulista RGE, whose next tariff cycle will be 2017. So these are the two largest concessioners from the point of view of residential and commercial consumers. So this increase of the level also is because of the inclusion of the telemeasurement of these consumers. Thank you. So at this moment, we would like to close our Q&A session, and I would like to ask Mr. Ferreira Jr. to proceed with his closing remarks. So once again, I would like to thank you all very much for listening in, and we state our positive outlook for regarding the last 6 months' activities. More than a question of uncertainty, I think that these have brought important stability, regulatory stability, and a soundness of regulation. And also, it's very important that the impact on concessioners has been very varied. I was just referring here with my colleagues, for example, to the theme of the concessions of CPFL generators. The first will expire in 2032, and most of them after 35. So this guarantees cash flow of these operations, which will be sufficient to continue to grow strongly in this segment that we have today, where we have not only an important stake in the renovables, but also to continue participating. We participate in the NEST in the last generation, large generation projects. And also I'd like to mention the moment that Brazil is experiencing and the impact that this can bring to the energy producers and the economic growth forecast is followed by an increase regarding energy sales prospects, and we are ready to meet these needs in all activities. The company is very active also in M&A. We think there is a great potential for growth, ambition regarding distribution and generation is well known. We can double our size in 5 years, but we are also well known for the for our capacity in commercialization and more recently in services. For all of this, and also considering not only the level of efficiency, but the results that I have presented, and typically were affected in the fourth quarter of last year, but we understand that all these regulatory steps and laws have only strengthened the companies, reducing the CVA activities or accounts. And we believe that the future results of the companies will mirror these good prospects, the recovery of past results, and also the decrease of future charges and the sharing of a very efficient platform to generate, distribute, and sell commercialized energy. We will see this in the next quarters. Thank you very much. The CPFL Energia audio conference for today is finished. Thank you very much and have a good day.